Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, November 12, 2020. Restore Illinois Phase 4, Day 186. By the numbers, Illinois impact, new IDPH recommendations, stay at home as much as possible, including work, for next 3 weeks. On a day that had added 305 cases, partly the result of the health district playing catch-up from recent days, Champaign County had the lowest 7-day positivity rate, 8.4%, of the 21 counties that make up Region 6. Now the bad news. Region 6's 7-day rate continued to trend in the wrong direction, rising from 11.9% to 12.2%. The counties with the highest rates, Fayette 23.3%, Effingham 21.4%, Iroquois 19.4%, and Clay 15.9%. 8 months to the day that a pandemic was declared, Longview, population 150, became the 27th Champaign County town with a confirmed case. Foosland, population 99, has had 11 cases. Ivesdale, population 258, 7. Among the new recommendations by the public health officials for the next 3 weeks, stay at home as much as possible and work with your employer to plan to work from home unless it is necessary for you to be in the workplace. Two sobering statistics. The state set another pandemic record for the most new cases, the sixth time in 10 days that's happened, and reported its most deaths in a 24-hour span since May. Community blamed for spread. To nursing homes, state 21 area facilities have multiple cases. Rising numbers of COVID-19 cases are taking a toll on nursing homes, and at least part of the reason is being attributed to community spread of coronavirus by people who are infected and don't have symptoms. If everyone would wear a mask and social distance to reduce the level of COVID in the community, we know we would dramatically reduce the rates in long-term facilities, said Mark Parkinson, president and CEO of American Healthcare Association National Center for Assisted Living. Long-term care facility residents account for 8% of the nation's COVID-19 cases, but 40% of the deaths, the organization said in a new report. And after 7 weeks of declining numbers of new cases in nursing homes, new weekly nursing home cases grew by 44% nationally from mid-September to mid-October, as more than 35 states began seeing rising numbers of COVID-19 cases. In Illinois, long-term care facilities must limit visits to residents to outdoor visits only by appointment. But infections can still find their way in through employees or when residents leave for medical appointments or trips to hospitals and return, or through independent living residents who are free to leave and return as they choose. Our employees, they have spouses who have jobs, they have children who go to school, so it makes sense that as Champaign County's cases go up, that you're going to be seeing them go everywhere, going throughout the community, said Karen Blatzer, Director of Marketing at Urbana's Clark Lindsay Village. Cases there have largely been among employees since the pandemic began, she said. Thanks to regular testing, employees who test positive can be isolated right away and have been asymptomatic, she said. To date, there have been 3 positive cases among residents at Clark Lindsay's Meadowbrook Health Center and 4 among residents in independent living apartments or homes, Blatzer said. Clark Lindsay will be continuing outdoor visits as the weather turns colder through heated tents on the grounds, Blatzer said. Requirements to wear masks and maintain six-foot distances still apply. It's important for residents to be able to see their loved ones, she said. The main thing is you have to maintain a balance of safety and quality of life, Blatzer said. As of Friday, Illinois has had 36,690 COVID-19 cases in nursing homes. To date, 5,253 of which have been fatal. That's up from October 23rd, when there were 33,440 long-term care cases and 5,019 deaths. Area outbreaks. In Champaign, Douglas, Ford, Piatt, and Vermilion counties, there were 21 open long-term care outbreaks, defined as those that have had new cases within the past 28 days of the last Illinois Department of Public Health update, which was Friday. By county, those include Champagne, Arbor Rose of Tolono, 4 cases. Autumn Fields, Savoy, 6 cases. Brookdale, Urbana, 8 cases and 1 death. Champaign Urbana Nursing and Rehab Savoy, 20 cases and 1 death. Eagles View Supportive Living and Memory Care Rantoul, 10 cases. Evergreen Place Champaign, 6 cases. Greenhouse Homes at Clark Lindsay Urbana, 4 cases. Illini Heritage Rehab and Health Champaign, 41 cases. Meadowbrook Health Center at Clark Lindsay Urbana, 9 cases. University Rehabilitation Center Urbana, 9 cases. Douglas, Arcola Healthcare, Arcola, 2 cases. Tuscola Healthcare Center, Tuscola, 10 cases and 1 death. Ford, Accolade Senior Living, Paxton, 16 cases. Piper City Rehab and Living Center, Piper City, 67 cases and 11 deaths. Pyatt, Arbor Rose of Monticello, 11 cases. Vermilion, Arcadia Care of Danville, 23 cases and 1 death. Colonial Manor, Danville, 8 cases. Garden View Manor, Danville, 3 cases. Hawthorne Inn, Danville, 9 cases. Heritage Health, Hoopston, 2 cases. VA Ileana Healthcare System, Danville, 7 cases. Ask the Admin. A daily question for the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District's Julie Pride. As of November 2nd, we've had 6,588 cases of COVID-19. Does that mean 6,588 total different people have tested positive? Or does that mean a total of 6,588 tests have been reported positive and it's been fewer individual citizens who tested positive? When the public reads the numbers of new cases, it sounds like that means more individuals have tested positive and it's spreading. Would it be prudent to tell the community how many individual citizens have tested positive rather than a number that includes people who have retested and shown up positive again? How many individuals in our county have tested positive? Answer: cases of COVID-19 are separate individuals living in Champaign County. If a person with COVID-19 tests repeatedly, that will still count as one case. If after 3 months a person tests positive again, it is a reinfection and would be counted as a case. People who test positive in Champaign but who live in other counties are counted as cases in the county where they live. And a salute to veterans. There's a photo on the front page, World War II veteran vet Jim Kelly of Urbana, an Iwo Jima survivor who will be 99 on December 29th, salutes during the Veterans Day ceremony at the Champaign County Veterans Memorial on Wednesday at the Champaign County Courthouse in Urbana. There's also a picture of Vietnam Navy chaplain Philip Glick, waves to applause during the drive-through Veterans Day event at Hessel Park in Champaign on Wednesday. Members of the Champaign and Champaign West Rotary Clubs, along with the UI Tri-Service ROTC, greeted veterans as they drove through the Circle Drive and gave them drinks, pizza, and cookies. And there's also a photo of two airplanes. The Hessel Park event included a flyover just after noon by Frasca Planes. And a continuation of the article, Community Blame for Spread, first to nursing homes and also to U of I campus. Chancellor, faculty's rate exceeds students. With 2 weeks until Thanksgiving, a long winter ahead, and new restrictions on the University of Illinois campus, officials are hoping people don't develop pandemic fatigue. Unlike humans, the virus doesn't get tired, said Marty Burke, the chemistry and professor leading the U of I's testing effort. We all have to recommit ourselves to staying very safe. With an increase in COVID-19 cases on campus, the U of I is encouraging students and employees to limit their activities and increasing how often grad students, faculty, and staff have to get tested. An average of more than 50 cases are being detected each day on campus, up from about 10 a day in mid-October. The 7-day test positivity rate is now higher for faculty and staff than it is for undergraduates, Chancellor Robert Jones wrote this week in a mass email. Jones said the virus is spreading from the community to the U of I, not from the U of I to the community. This is driven by the dramatic increase in the cases in East Central Illinois during this time period. From contact tracing, we can determine that this is not due to classroom or on-the-job transmission, Jones said. The spread is likely to be through your household or social contacts. Burke also said his team looked at what the U of I's rising caseload correlates with. When we do that, the only thing we can co the only thing we see correlation with is the rise in case communities in the numbers in the surrounding community, Burke said. The positivity rate is higher among faculty and staff, Burke said, because they tend to have more exposure to the community. And he said, we've gotten a really good level of compliance from undergraduates overall. While Burke said there remain some issues in terms of complaints, we don't have a rise in complaints. Undergraduates are also experiencing a rise in cases, but it's tracking with what we're seeing for the staff, Burke said. He is optimistic the changes Jones announced will slow the spread of the disease. We saw it work last time, he said, referring to the spike in cases after students returned in the fall. And because we have the data in real time, we can move and pivot and make changes. Among the changes, grad students, faculty, and staff who have been reduced to testing once a week will now return to testing twice a week, the same frequency as undergraduates, Jones said. Jones also encouraged them to work from home if possible for the next 3 weeks and participate only in essential activities. Last week, Jones sent a similar mass email to undergraduates, which read in part, "This past weekend saw gatherings associated with Halloween, football, and no doubt other events. By not consistently wearing masks, minimizing social gatherings, properly washing hands, and getting tested, your peers' actions have led to a concerning and rapid increase in the number of new undergraduate COVID-19 cases, very similar to the trend we saw in August and early September." Jones warned students not to host or attend parties and to limit themselves to essential activities if they're planning to travel over Thanksgiving. If we do not address this on-campus trend right now, we will be forced to take more extreme measures before fall break, Jones wrote. If students travel, Jones said they shouldn't return until spring semester to reduce the risk of spreading the virus further. If they return early, they must test every other day until the end of the semester, Jones said. Students who return to or who have remained in the community after fall break must limit themselves to essential activities only, such as testing, visiting the pharmacy, and buying groceries through the end of the semester, he wrote. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. For the fourth consecutive year, talented musician Justine Kaufman helped in the playing of taps during Tuscola High School's annual Veterans Day tribute. She was on trumpet, a role as coveted as quarterback and football love in Tuscola, at the in-spring 11 a.m. ceremony outside Douglas County Courthouse. "Every year it's an honor," the 17-year-old said. As a freshman and sophomore, she played Echo in the two-person performance. Last year, Kaufman landed the lead role. "Nerve-wracking," she said. "Usually Tuscola holds an all-day assembly in the gym. Due to the pandemic, Wednesday's many activities shifted outside, with 8th grader Jackson Berlew joining Kaufman for taps. As much as she enjoys feedback from peers and band, Kaufman said hearing from veterans is especially impactful. "So many come to me and say thank you," she said. "I tell them no thank you for what you've done." Teacher of the Week, Michaela Ponstein, Arthur Grade School. Passionate about making a difference. Michaela Ponstein strives to find creative ways for her students to learn every year, and that's never been more important than this year. In her fifth year of teaching, the third grade teacher has helped lead the way at Arthur Grade School in terms of teaching with technology as a member of the school improvement team. She also put math toolkits together for her students, knowing they couldn't share equipment. Ms. Ponstein has not only been such an amazing influence in the lives of her students, she has been a leader among her fellow teachers, Principal Sage Hale said. She has thrived with learning technology and how to teach remotely, as well as guiding many other teachers along the way. Ms. Ponstein's enthusiasm and love of teaching shine through and create a spark that helps students achieve greatness. I find my work important because every day I have the opportunity to make a positive impact on the students in my classroom. I feel it is my job to set my students up to be successful in the future. I not only teach them different subject matter, but also life lessons. My goal is to be their number one supporter and instill a love of learning in them. I became a teacher because I love learning and am passionate about making a difference in kids' lives. Every day that I go to work, it is different. I am constantly learning about my students and what works for them and what doesn't. I feel like every challenge I face makes me a better teacher and person. I learn as much, if not more, from my kids than they do from me. My favorite, most unique lesson I teach is I love teaching lessons on multiplication. There are so many ways to make learning the different strategies hands-on and fun. Last year, we set up an array bakery in both third grade classrooms for the students to go through different scenarios solving multiplication problems related to baking. It was complete with chef's hats, cookies, and sprinkles. My most fulfilling moment on the job was any time a student from a previous year comes back to my room and lets me know I have helped them or impacted them in some way. It is always very rewarding to me. My goal is to create a lasting impact on them. Something else I am passionate about is running. I ran track through high school and college. I began coaching girls track at ALH High School when I started my first year teaching and continued up until this year. I engage students during this strange time by continually finding different ways to make learning hands-on and allowing for my students to collaborate with each other. Over the summer, I put together math toolkits for each of my students, knowing they would not be able to share supplies. This allows them to still have concrete manipulatives when learning and practicing various math skills. I have also learned about many different Google features, such as slides and Lamboard, to allow my students to work together while being on their own device. If I weren't a teacher, I can't imagine being anything other than a teacher. I have known I wanted to be a teacher since I was in first grade. Positive sign. Community takes fifth grade teacher's idea and runs with it. Tuscola residents serving in the military are being formally recognized in the community. A ceremony was held on Veterans Day at Irvin Park to highlight the Tuscola Serves Project, which recognizes those from the community who are serving in the armed forces. Following a service at the Douglas County Courthouse organized by the local VFW and American Legion posts, a parade was held downtown and ending at the park for the dedication ribbon-cutting ceremony. Mayor Dan Kleiss, Sean Connor of the VFW post, and Carmen Morgan spoke. Kleiss praised Morgan for bringing the Tuscola Serves idea to the city council and helping to organize it. Morgan, whose son Cade is serving in the Navy, said the idea for the project came from another mom who has a child serving in the military. She said the community had a similar project like Tuscola Served several years ago, but it was difficult to keep track of those serving. Morgan started the project by having Tuscola residents and graduates who are serving in the military fill out a Google form. She received a grant from the Tuscola Community Foundation that got the process rolling to make the signs. She praised the cooperation of the VFW Post for assisting in the project, including use of the Post's nonprofit status. 31 signs are part of Tuscola Serves Project, with more to be added. The signs will be presented to the servicemen and women at the conclusion of their service. Morgan, a fifth grade teacher at Tuscola's East Prairie Middle School, said her son is stationed aboard the USS Nimitz, a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier currently deployed in the Persian Gulf. Students show their support. Gifford Grade School Council members showed their appreciation to military veterans on Wednesday. The students worked in shifts to hand out care packages that included a star cookie bookmark and personalized card. Veterans were asked to call and reserve a care package and then pick it up at the drive-up station set up outside the school, Student Council sponsor Sandy Barron said. They also sent care packages and signs to Country Health Nursing Home for the veterans residing there. We have Jim Dye's column. Do anti-Madigan Dems have stomach and means for fight? If the future of Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan really is open to question after the November 3rd election, there's a huge fight ahead. A handful of Democratic legislators have made it clear that they will not vote to re-elect Madigan as House Speaker in January. But just as Madigan critics spoke out about the need for less ethically compromised party leadership, organized labor leaders issued separate statements telling Madigan foes to fudge a doubt about it. Not sure I pronounced that right. Forget about it, that's what it says. Madigan is still their man. At the same time, Madigan's legislative supporters spoke out in support of the boss, and suddenly Governor J.B. Pritzker decided Madigan's legislative future isn't his call. Asked if House Democrats should re-elect Madigan as Speaker, Pritzker said, "That's a decision that members of the House will make in January. They'll be taking a vote on a Speaker, and that's their business," he told reporters. Pritzker's retreat from House business came just a few days after he joined Democratic U.S. Senator Richard Durbin in urging Madigan to step away from the leadership of the Illinois Democratic Party. Durbin said November 3rd results showed Madigan is not helping the party, an attitude that Pritzker also embraced. But as they say, that was then, this is now. The AFL-CIO, a longtime financial and political backer of Madigan, issued a statement saying it strongly supports Michael Madigan's continued leadership as Illinois House Speaker and Chairman of the Democratic Party in Illinois. So did the International Union of Operating Engineers 150, another political heavyweight union. It's more clear than ever that Illinois' fiscal challenges are severe and immediate, and it is disheartening to see leaders wasting our time playing the blame game only days after the election. Even in the best of times, that doesn't pass for leadership, the union said. Madigan is the face of the Democratic Party in Illinois, having served as Speaker of the Illinois House for all but 2 years since 1983, and as the longtime chairman of the Illinois Democratic Party. He uses those two positions to pull in multiple millions of dollars in campaign cash, which he uses to elect favored Democrats. A ruthless practitioner of the dark art of politics, he has been immensely successful in building a patronage army that gives him unprecedented reach into every corner of Illinois. Excuse me. That includes Commonwealth Edison, where Madigan succeeded in honeycombing the utility's lobbying arm with friends and associates, giving rise to the pending criminal investigation that has roiled the state and threatened Madigan's empire. The investigation is an ugly business, the one that confirms all the public suspicions about Madigan's approach to government. But he hasn't been charged and insists he's innocent, a word that is inconsistent with Madigan's approach to everything. He's clearly been hurt by the probe, as last week's election results attest. But how much has he been hurt? Madigan's Democrats control Illinois. They have supermajorities in the House and Senate and control the governor's office. Plus, they're on the verge of another legislative remapping in which Madigan will put his map-drawing skills to work and cement Democratic control of the House and Senate through 2032. Some Democrats obviously are complaining, but if the acquisition of power is their goal, that's what's there really to complain about other than Madigan's style. Besides, they have more than a problem with Madigan. If somehow Dems want to rid themselves of this troublesome political priest, who is the successor? Madigan rules through the use of a carrot and stick. Cooperate with him and he'll take care of you. Don't cooperate with him and, well, he'll take care of you. He needs 60 votes to be re-elected Speaker in January and has 72 House Democrats. A handful have said they won't support Madigan's continued leadership. Excuse me. He contends he's not going anywhere, and everyone knows he has ample resources and powerful friends who can back up that pledge. Here's one more thing to consider. Madigan has never indicated that he'll leave at any time other than of his own choosing. That time may never come. It certainly isn't here now. Group hopes to institute term limits in Rantoul. Petitions are being circulated in the community that seek to place a question on the April 6th ballot regarding term limits for elected officials in village government. It would ask voters if those elected to the offices of mayor, village trustee, and village clerk in Rantoul should be limited to no more than 2 4-year terms in the same office. Local activist Deborah Sweat said the drive is being spearheaded by her and 3 or 4 people who think term limits are needed. "We did this because Rantoul is changing," Sweat said. "We need to have new and fresh leadership within the community. We need a better and more even distribution of power in this town." Sweat said the group is trying to limit special interests because that's what's driving Rantoul. And just some of the things that are happening, we're not getting answers to questions. She said the original hope was to place the question on the November ballot, but the group didn't have enough time to secure the needed signatures. The group has until January 4th to get the necessary 318 signatures of registered voters. Sweat said the goal is to get at least 400 signatures. Village Clerk Mike Graham said if the proposed referendum passes, it will not take effect for 8 years or until May 1st, 2029. Sweat was also part of a group that placed a question on the ballot in November 2018 that asked voters whether the community should be divided into six village trustee districts, a measure that passed. Residents can only run for village board to represent the district in which they reside. Previously, trustee candidates ran as at-large candidates. Proponents of the districting change argued that the majority of those serving on the village board live north of U.S. 136 and that South Rantoul was underrepresented. Voters last week also approved by a 69% margin, staggering the terms of board candidates elected in April. Those wanting more info on the petition issue may contact Sweat at 217-892-8038 or rantoulterm.limit@gmail.com. Man hit and killed by train in Tuscola. A man in his 30s was killed when he was hit by a train Wednesday morning. The Douglas County Sheriff's Office reported the accident occurred at Cabot Corporation, 700 East U.S. 36. Sheriff deputies responded and found the deceased male. A preliminary investigation found the cause of death was accidental. The Sheriff's Office, Douglas County Coroner's Office, and Watco, a short line railroad company, continued to investigate the accident. Sheriff's Police received a report of the accident at 9:44 a.m. Champaign County Crime Stoppers, suspects sought in fatal shooting. Crime Stoppers of Champaign County needs help finding the person or people who killed an Urbana man in West Champaign last month. About 2 a.m. October 8th, police were sent to the 3000 block of West William Street in Champaign for a shooting. They found Martin Morrow, 29, unresponsive in the middle of the road with multiple life-threatening gunshot wounds. He was taken to a hospital where he died a short time later. Police said could use any information regarding this shooting and are asking anyone in the neighborhood with surveillance cameras to review the footage for any suspicious persons or vehicles captured before or after the incident. If you have any information, contact Crime Stoppers at 217-373-9477, 373tips.com, or via the free P3 Tips mobile app. Tipsters are always 100% completely anonymous when contacting Crime Stoppers. All tips are electronically stripped of any personal identifying information and processed by a third-party answering service. Tipsters will never be asked their names and are given a secret code number to use when checking on a possible reward. Cash rewards of up to $1,000 may be paid on tips that lead to an arrest. This has been Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, November 12th, 2020. Please stay tuned for Part 2.